Good evening and welcome to Art Waves. I'm Bernadette Rule, and tonight my guest is John Terpstra. John Terpstra is a highly respected Hamilton writer who has published 10 books of poetry and 5 of nonfiction. His poetry has won the CBC Literary Competition and has been shortlisted for both the Governor General's Award and the Raymond Souster Award. One of his poems, called Giants, is installed on a plaque at the edge of the escarpment in Sam Lawrence Park, overlooking downtown Hamilton. His nonfiction work includes The Boys, or Waiting for the Electrician's Daughter, which was shortlisted for the Charles Taylor Prize and the BC Award for Canadian Nonfiction. Terpstra has written 3 books about the city of Hamilton and its geography, Falling into Place and The House with the Parapet Wall, and most recently, Daylighting Should Oak Creek. Welcome back to Art Waves, John Terpstra.
Thank you very much, Bernadette. It's a pleasure to be here. Do you need something for that cough?
I have a glass of water. Okay. I should tell our listeners that this interview is the first I've done pandemic style on Zoom, because as we speak, the world is still under the lockdown due to the coronavirus, and we are learning to do a lot of things long distance. Hamilton is in phase 2 of the reopening, but Mohawk College will still allow no visitors to enter its hallowed halls. Hence, we are now doing Art Waves on Zoom for the time being. So, John Terpstra, how are you doing with all this?
Oh, I'm doing fine. I mean, it's a little lonely sometimes, but basically, because I've reached that hoary old age of retirement or something approaching retirement, life is not all that different. You know, there's less shopping.
That's true.
Yeah, so that's not so bad. There's less human interaction, you know, there's no people coming over to our house, but now we're having, you know, we get together because it's summertime, we can get together in the backyard, keeping our distance from each other. So no, all in all, we're doing well. Thank you.
You have to admit, it is a crazy time of world history to be living through.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. Yeah. I mean, that's hard. That's almost unimaginable, really. I mean, you've got to pinch yourself to think, okay, actually, we are actually living through a pandemic that's global. It's almost more than a single human mind can take in.
Well, let me ask you this, John Terpstra. How do you think it has affected your writing, your work?
How has it affected it?
Yeah. Has it crept into your work at all?
No, not really. Not at this stage. No. More has crept in from the recent protests involved in the death of George Floyd.
Yeah? About that?
Well, not writing about it, but just, I guess, a more sharpened awareness of how injustice is so incredibly prevalent within some communities, and that people who live in other communities like our own white Anglo-Saxon retired demographic can be so, you know, fundamentally unaware, or, you know, I mean, perhaps unforgivably ignorant.
Kind of untouched by it.
Yeah, and you cannot really take in what an everyday thing it is for others. Like, that part is also just mind-boggling.
It's true. You know, I recently noticed in Dundas, Canadian Tire has moved to the University Plaza, and their old site is derelict now and quite weedy and overgrown. And I drove past the other day and noticed that there were a bunch of gorgeous red roses of various shades of red growing on the lot that nobody was even noticing. They were all tangled in weeds. And I thought, wow, I love roses. I can't grow them on my place because I don't have any sunshine. And I just thought, you know, I'm going to go back and get those. But I didn't want to do it in the daytime. So the other night at midnight, under cover of darkness, I put my gardening gloves on and got my secateurs and a jar with a little water in it. And I snuck over there and drove onto the lot. And there were people out walking around at that hour. It was interesting. And a few driving by. But, you know, it was relatively dark for me, and I got out and I cut a whole bunch of those, and they are stunning, I have to say. I'm so happy I did it. And I was telling Rosie about this, my sister, and she said, you do know that if you were Black, you would never have been able to do that. Yeah. And I thought, wow, yeah, I never thought of it. White privilege, you know, nobody would question too much. They might question, but they certainly wouldn't put me in jail over cutting those roses. But things like that.
They wouldn't shoot you. They wouldn't shoot you for it.
Right, pretty terrible to think about the lack of personal freedom that some people have in our society. So what are you writing these days that this is sort of informing your thinking?
Oh, it's not coming out in poems or other writing. It's more words here and there. I'm currently putting together another collection of prayers. And in those prayers, I've added some lines here and there. Because I discovered that most of the references that I had were mostly to, issues of poverty and social issues, but not the injustice issues per se. So already, you know, my ignorance or my unawareness or my whatever it is was embedded in these prayers that I've been writing over the last number of years. It feels kind of, shameful might be a strong word, but it's something like that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, we have, like right on our street, there's a Black family who lives here. And it wasn't until this whole thing came down that I really kind of thought, wow, I'm keeping my distance from them. As I do that with many neighbors because, you know, you don't, if you don't have a some reason to make contact with them, I'm a bit, whatever, standoffish or shy or whatever it is. And I wondered, so is the reason why I haven't just said hi or whatever, because they're Black? Is that why, you know? I mean, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question, but I think it's part of it, you know? I think it is part of it. I don't know if it would have been different if they would have been, you know, like what? It might have been the same if they were a white family who was there and they were, you know, and they all drove pickup trucks and wore red kerchiefs around their necks and blared out, you know, some metal music or something. I'd be scared of them. I'd be scared of them too.
Scared of them. So you're using the word scared, but the idea is just that these are different groups within our own society that you would be shy about approaching.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, honestly, it would apply to people, well, really anyone who's different from me, I hate to say, you know, if they're Muslim or whatever. The thing is that as soon as you say hi, which I did actually with these people that live two doors over, and I mean, instantly, everybody's just a person.
Right.
You know, you just say hi, they smile, you smile, and then you're a person, then you start talking. It's just kind of, it's that initial barrier,
it is really good to open your circle wider, even though we're in COVID times and we're supposed to be closing it tight.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
Crazy double message that we get. Okay, so you're working on a book of prayers. And do you have a publisher for that yet? Or what was the impetus for that?
Yeah, it was. So I had another book that came out, when was it? 2 or 3 years ago, called In the Company of All. And it's the same publisher who asked if I had more. So over the course of 3 years, more prayers had accumulated from these Sunday morning gigs I have. And this time I was able to weave into the manuscript as well a few poems that had collected over the years that were also more specifically, I guess, biblically based.
Okay, so it's a mixture of prayers and poems.
Yeah, mostly prayers, but some poems slipped in there for sure.
Interesting. And do you notice much of a difference between those two?
Honestly, in the kind of language that I'm using and the way that it's written, I think they go together quite well. They blend together quite well. I mean, okay. You know yourself. I mean, people have read my stuff and they can't tell. They say they don't distinguish between my poetry and my prose. Like they
right.
It's the same. The same thing now with I occasionally send some of these prayers out to people, various people, just for them to read or for whatever reason, and then I get an email back that says thanks for the poem. You know, I go. Yeah, so I mean, they can't tell that way either. So I don't know what the heck they are.
I like it. You didn't mention the name of the publisher.
Oh, St. Thomas Poetry Series in Toronto.
With David Kent. Yes, lovely, yeah. Lovely poetry series they have.
Yeah, for sure. And they have a new designer for the book. So that's kind of nice. They've had the same designer for, 25 years? And now it's someone else.
Okay. Who is the new designer? Do you know?
I don't actually know. I don't remember that David told me that David Kent, the publisher, told me the name or not. But
yeah.
So okay. I don't really know.
So that book is due out in the fall?
Yes, all things being equal, you know, and if the world, well, it'll probably come out regardless. It's just how you're going to launch it. This morning I was at a book launch.
Oh, you were?
I was at a book launch in downtown Hamilton by someone who has a lot more energy than me, and not just because he's so young, but he wrote a book and he wanted to launch it, and it's, you can't have a regular kind of book launch now. So instead he's having a live stream event over this whole day, and then every hour he invited different people to come and talk or answer questions or speak, or in my case to give a reading. So I sat on his front porch and you know, he had a couple of techies that were set up there with a laptop and an iPad and microphones and that. Oh. And then we went live, and it went on to, I have no idea how many platforms I was on this morning. It was like Instagram, Facebook, and then other ones that I didn't even recognize. So
crazy.
And then at the same time, he had, you know, because this was all advertised on the various ways that you advertise these things these days, people were dropping by. There was a constant stream of people dropping by to pick up a book under the canopy that they put on their front lawn.
Well, that's interesting.
And to, you know, spread themselves out and talk on the sidewalk and on the street and on the driveway across the street. And it was a real event. It was a street event.
Wow. You know? What's the name of the poet?
It's not a poet. He's actually a minister, Kevin Makins. And he wrote a book called Why Would Anyone Go to Church?
Okay.
So, yeah.
So this is more of your religion offering you opportunity to be bubbly.
Well, some of us, yes, some of us are religious and others are not.
Indeed. Well, that is very cool. So you've just spent the whole day doing COVID launch and interview type things. So you're no.
Yeah, it was actually cool because I could read these poems that had come out in a book like 18 years ago, Disarmament. And yeah. And they were particularly pertinent just to the subject matter in his book, you know?
So right. Of course they
I mean, it's neat kind of because it's a blending of communities, or mm-hmm. you know, the communities moving freely back and forth within each other. It's quite delightful and energizing, though, you know, I would never have as much energy as someone like him has. Is keep meeting these energetic extroverts honestly, you know, the amount that they can get done, and the like I was thinking afterwards, I could never organize an event like this, but it was such a pleasure, and there were so many people involved with it, you know. I thought, well, it's too bad that I can't, but you know
John, I just want to remind you of October 3rd, 1993.
Well, this is true.
When you and I engineered the arts festival, the name of which I've now forgotten.
The whole lot.
The whole lot. And it
was
a dimensional arts festival. So it really is not about you not being able to do it at all. It's about you not caring to do it at this age, which is normal and natural. Embrace your old age, John.
You know, you're probably right. You're probably right.
Of course, you've done a ton of things in your life.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's very true. I mean, that event, which is now, 25 years ago, 1993?
Yeah.
That was an immense amount of work and very rewarding, and we decided to never do it again.
You did it one more time, but I couldn't do it the second time. It was incredible, but lots of fun, and it is the kind of thing that you can do when you're younger. And that is as it should be. We need our young ones to come along and organize all these things now.
Yeah. Well, it comes rather naturally to them, as it did to us at that time.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay, so you also have a suite of poems in the latest Hamilton Arts and Letters Journal, which was just released. What is that suite of poems called, John?
It's called Greetings from Head of the Lake and Other Poems.
Okay.
Yeah.
you love a nice, tight opening, don't you? A nice, tight title.
I was just attracted to, I think, we had just gone through one of the boxes in our basement that come from Mary, my wife's home state of New Jersey, her home, you know, it was like the Ark. A box we hadn't gone through in a long period of time. And there was a bundle of old postcards, that some of which had been received or sent, and others that were blank. And they were the kind of thing that, they were of the vintage that said, greetings from, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And lots of postcards of motels, you know, because everybody would always get a postcard of a motel somewhere.
Free.
Remember those? Oh, gee.
Yeah, they're free. They still go.
Also, a whole stack of postcards that were never sent, that were original postcards from the New York World's Fair of 1964.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So anyway, that's partly where the title came from.
Okay.
And I've always wanted to use the name Head of the Lake in a title, I think.
Because really that's what Hamilton should be called, unless we called it Mikasa.
Well, yeah, Mikasa because of the bay. Yeah, I'm not as attached to that one. I like Head of the Lake. I like Head of the Lake because it's descriptive of where we are, you know?
Yeah, well, if I remember correctly, Mikasa means Lake of Shining Waters or some darn thing, you know, so it's also descriptive of where we are.
Yeah, though, you know, Susan Evans Shaw, who just won the Lifetime Achievement Award. She and I talked about the original name of Hamilton Harbor, Burlington Bay, and she hasn't been able to find it. She hasn't been able to come up with to find what the original name was. So whether it was Mikasa or something else,
I thought it was
shrouded in mystery.
Well, like so much of our past, and I would love to see Dundas's name changed now that they've found out that it was a person in full bore favor of slavery who was the town is named for. But
it's a very interesting question, eh? It's a very interesting question.
It is. I hope that it can be addressed, but it doesn't look like we're addressing it here in Hamilton, or in Dundas, rather, or in Hamilton.
Well, I don't know enough about, I guess I should check the Dictionary of Hamilton Biography to find out what, I mean, George Hamilton is. I mean, already, okay, you have to kind of decide for yourself where you're going to let your ire take hold. Because, you know, yeah. I would say we should rename Hamilton because it's named after someone who basically started the city, the town of Hamilton as real estate speculation. What a god-awful way to be treating the earth upon which we live, you know, as a commodity. Like, it's just totally wrong. That gets my ire up, you know? So let's rename it for that reason. But, you know, or you name something, you know, Maple Lane or Maple Estates, not because there are maples there, but because there were maples there before you built your estates.
That's right.
You know, your suburban estate. So that's an abomination too. So
yes, we have so much work to do.
It gets pretty hard figuring it out, you know. By the time 200 years of behind a word kind of has disappeared, so many of our places here are named after places, you know, in Scotland or, a lot of Scottish
yes.
Names, but, some places have been renamed, like Kitchener was renamed, right?
They were renamed because of our wartime enemies became, you know, Germany. Yeah. And so they didn't want it to be called Berlin anymore. So we can do these things if we get enough energy behind the idea. And surely wanting to right the wrongs of the past is better than because that person's now your enemy, you're going to change the name. Like, good Lord. Anyway, it's a discussion for another time because it's taking too much of our little bit of time we have here today. So let's get back to your, not that we shouldn't be dealing with this. We should. Perhaps I should just have a panel on renaming place names in the current climate of opinion. Anyway,
what would you rename Dundas?
Well, something to do with the valley. It's the valley town. It could be called Valley Town or Valley or something, I don't know, but something that has to do with the natural formation of the place rather than the people who first came here and strong-armed others off the land, you know, or whatever. Anyway, I don't know, but it's worth thinking about. I'm sure we could do better than Dundas, even on the level of sound, you know. Dundas is a terrible sounding name. Anyway, John Terpstra, get back to
Bernadette Rule, yes.
Let's remind our listeners that they're tuned into Art Waves on 101.5 The Hawk tonight, and I'm Bernadette Rule, and my guest is the irrepressible, almost irrepressible. He says he is repressible, actually.
John Terpstra. Been repressed.
All right, so John Terpstra, can you read us a poem from the series that's just been published in Hamilton Arts and Letters? Would you like to? From Greetings from Head of the Lake and Other Poems?
Yeah, sure. I would be happy to. It would be a privilege. I'm going to read one. So I've done a lot of stuff. It's not as if I'm a researcher or anything. I just nose around a little bit. When I've got enough to write a book, I write a book. But I've been working on creeks, and specifically Shadoke Creek, an urban creek that runs underneath the suburbs on the mountain in Hamilton on top of the escarpment, and then has a waterfall, and then is underground again in a storm drain under a golf course, and then runs beside a highway. It became the subject of a book that I wrote called Daylighting Shadoke. During the course of this investigation, I discovered that the first Euro settlers, shall we call them, who came to this area from the United States after the war, the Revolutionary War, were actually from Pennsylvania, and they were second generation refugees already from Germany, Germany, Austria, something like that. Their parents had come over because the British had given them land in Pennsylvania, and then. So they were loyal to the British, which made them unwelcome in the United States after the Revolutionary War. So they came here where the British offered them land again. We won't go into all the other issues behind that, giving them land from whom, one might ask.
Right. But what was the name of the family?
The Hess family. So there were a number of families that came. So the story was that the story is that they came with five couples and their 40 children, 50 people altogether, made this journey with all their cattle and their worldly goods. And they settled on top of the mountain and they started farms there, most of them beside creeks, as I found out. And the Hess family was at the source of Shadoke Creek. The fathers had come the previous year to scope out the place. So anyway, I wrote this poem that I'm going to read, which is getting a prologue that's longer than the poem. because I'm also, at the same time, it's all about water, you know, and water as we experience these days, mostly in an urban setting, is either, you know, when the water goes into the storm drain or from our taps, you know, the water that is drawn from the lake, purified to be drinkable and comes to us miraculously through these pipes in the ground. And so I'm going to read this poem called A Brief History of Settlement on Hamilton Mountain from 1789. We came to a place after many days walking, the top of a cliff, a plateau of wood and meadow, and followed a creek to its sweet water's source, below an outcrop of rock tall enough to provide a broad view of this oasis from the strife we had so recently suffered in another land. We gave thanks and chose to stay, as did all our company, each family planted beside spring and pond of creeks whose paths they traced from waterfalls over that long cliff which served as a protective rampart to our community for seven generations, until the young city mounted its height, stormed our fields and woodlots, buried creeks in pipes, and sent springs into hiding beneath the trees, the few left standing, the trees, those intermediaries between ourselves and our maker, whose roots never cease to divine the living waters that my people, naked under shower heads, with kitchen faucets running full blast, forget.
That's beautiful, John Terpstra. Absolutely gorgeous.
Did you like that?
Yeah, I love how you do that. You've got nature, you've got human history, and you've got current human life all rolled together so seamlessly and beautifully there. Thank you for that. That's wonderful.
Oh, well, thank you.
it's terrific. So let's just tell our listeners that you can go to Hamilton Arts and Letters online. Just Google Hamilton Arts and Letters. Which issue is it? Issue number
13.2? It's the most recent one. It just came out.
Yes, I think that's right. Issue number 13.2. If you want to read that entire suite of poems by John Terpstra called Greetings from Head of the Lake and Other Poems. Beautifully done. All right. So, John, that was so lovely. I think our listeners would like to hear a second poem from you.
Would they now? Well, I'd like to read another creek poem.
Okay. Is it from that same selection from
it's
Hamilton?
It's from the same selection, yeah. And it's... It has to do with a creek that I found. Well, it's all in the poem. I don't need to say anything about it. I call it the Once and Future Creek. And it's got this little bit of a verse from the book of Revelation in the Bible. You may have heard of that book, the Bible. I'm not sure. I don't make any assumptions here. And the quote is, "And then the angel showed me the river of the water of life, bright as crystal, flowing through the middle of the street." Nice, isn't it?
That's beautiful.
A surprise creek runs bright between cracked and weedy slabs of concrete through a vacant lot at the bottom of Queen Street, where railway tracks block the shoreline of the bay. The creek flows past piles of brick and a row of container boxes filled with God knows what, slips under a chain link fence and crosses a sidewalk, falling over the curb and through a storm drain grate. It has flowed long enough now that marsh grasses grow at its edge, and two ducks swam upstream hurriedly, looking over their shoulders when I came by to take photographs. The creek runs like a long lost memory through a desolate and redundant industrial area, the first landscape of the city to be forested in smokestacks seven generations back. where a century-old bird's-eye map shows ravines, and an older map, their watercourses, one of which, impossibly, matches the path of this clear blue line. If the deal doesn't fall through, this vacant lot will become home to a movie studio, a big box in which imaginary worlds will be created, while the real world, a world to which, thanks to a daughter of the city who pointed me to this rill, this trickle, a world to which I am even more perilously attached, is blocked out and buried. Seven generations. It's so unkind. What can I tell the children? I'm sick of finding reasons and making excuses for the naked disrespect, most of which have to do with money. Although I dare not lap or dip a cup, I take this creek whose source is likely a left-on tap or leaking water main as revelation. I read this brooklet as a line of hope against hope, speaking from the future.
Oh, another beautiful one. And I love, I read this brooklet. That's a good pun is always good. Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah. John, your passion for these things is quite moving and quite infectious. So I hope it does good things for the city of Hamilton and its people.
And waterways everywhere. Yeah.
And its waterways, yes. Well, John, you give us a couple more places where people can hear you. I know you were recently interviewed by the City of Hamilton Arts Council. Is that right?
Yeah, for Arts Week, it was Why Art Now, I think it was called. So there's an, I'm not even actually sure what materialized from the interview that I did with two young theater artists. It's being broadcast, I guess.
Yes, it's there. If you go to the Hamilton Arts Week icon or type that in, there are interviews with various artists and you are one of them. So it is up. People can hear that interview.
I'm not going to look at it.
Okay. What is your latest book? I think I may have gotten that wrong. Daylighting Chidoak Creek is your latest prose work. What's your latest poetry book?
Mischief.
Mischief is the latest. Okay.
That's correct. Yes.
Good. All right. Good. So those books are all available. If you wanted to order them online again, you could go to Epic Books and do that, or you could go to West Hamilton Books, is it?
King West. King West Books.
King West Books.
All one word, yeah.
King West Books, or you can go to the printed word.
I assume that James has them there, or J.H. Gordon on King Street East.
Yeah. Or you can go to the usual suspects, the big box store books, Indigo and Chapters. You can get them through there too, I'm sure. But in any case, John Terpstra's work is widely available and well worth your time. Okay, so last question for you, John.
Okay.
What piece of music have you chosen for us to play tonight to close Art Waves, and why that?
Well, I have picked an unusual song by the artist Lou Reed. It's unusual because it's quite melodic, positive, and it's just an interesting story about him taking his motorcycle and driving from New York City into Pennsylvania. And he's got a great line in there about 2 years ago. Let's see now, 2 years ago, it's something about New Year's Eve, but I ain't no dog tied to a parked car. I want to stay married. I ain't no dog. It's a great song. It's a great song. I've always loved it. It's pretty unusual in his
canon. Yeah.
Yeah, in his canon. There's the word. Yeah.
And what is it called again?
It's called New Sensations.
All right. Well, that is what we're going to close with tonight, Art Waves listeners. And I hope you will enjoy it as much as I know John will and I will. John, thank you so much for being my first COVID guest.
My pleasure.
It was kind of fun. I have to say, we'll see if I can get this edited and up online, but I want to tell our listeners that
miracles have happened. Yes.
Yeah, really. I don't know who will be on next week. I don't even know what week this will be up, but I have a bunch of people lined up and I'm going to start zooming all over the place with them soon. And Art Waves will come back to your 101.5 The Hawk radio station at 7 p.m. every Sunday night, starting very soon.
I have the visual image of you zooming through the air.
Yeah, well, something like that. Meanwhile, you can also hear all past podcasts of the program at archive.org/details/artwaves. And it's all available for you there. John, thanks again.
Thanks for having me, Bernadette. It's been a blast.
And we thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. And please do check us out again next week. We don't know what will happen, but something wonderful will happen on Art Waves next week at this same time and place. 101.5 The Hawk, 7 p.m. And we hope that you'll join us again next week. And until then, this is Bernadette Rule wishing you a good night on the shores of Lake Ontario.
Check the map, I stopped at a roadside diner for a burger and a Coke. There were some country folk and some hunters inside. Somebody got themselves married and somebody died. I went to the jukebox and played a hillbilly song. They was arguing about football as I waved and went outside. And I headed for the mountains, feeling warm inside. I love that GPC so much, you know, that I could kiss her. Sensations. Ooh, 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 new sensations. Talking about your new sensations. Sensation.